Welcome to the New Wave Nerds. We're here doing our first live stream. Shade, how are you doing today?
I am splendid.
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 Splendid. Wow, it's an old one since splendid.
Have
we're
you
here.
Splendid forever?
Is this? It is. And I do have access to the chat. Okay. Well, hello and welcome.
Yeah.
I'm glad. This is the New Wave Nerds. Welcome to our studio. This is the first time. That irritates me a little bit. That's okay. We'll have to figure that out at some point.
Yeah.
But today, Shade, what are we going to be doing?
Today, we are talking about the phenomenal movie Rebel Moon. Was released...
2023. December 22nd, 2023.
It is PG-13.
So Rebel Moon, part one, A Child of Fire. We have to say that now because the second one just came out yesterday, I believe the 19th, available on Netflix. And so we decided it made sense to review the first one. And it was perfect because neither of us had actually seen it before.
Yeah.
We'd sort of talked about watching it, but neither of us had ever really gotten around to it. Yeah. With it being on Netflix, it made it kind of difficult for you. And I, to be honest, had forgot it existed for a long time.
Yeah. I don't know. It just.
All right. So let's before we get into our non-spoiler review, why don't we go over the cast a little bit? So Rebel Moon, directed by Zack Snyder, who traditionally we've been fans of here at the New Wave Nerds. We've definitely talked high of Zack Snyder with him. So this is the director of 300, of Watchmen, Sucker Punch, but I didn't necessarily see that.
I've seen Sucker Punch.
Is it good?
I liked it. It was odd.
I think he talked about recently giving making another edition of it.
Yeah.
I think I got to bring my chair down a little bit.
Yeah, I've read that too. Oscar Isaac is the villain in it.
Oscar Isaac?
Oscar Isaac, yeah.
So he's the villain. He doesn't do villain often. It's like just that and like X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, right. I forgot.
As much as we want to forget that happens. Yeah. Well, but, you know, traditionally we're fans of Zack Snyder. So this is a grand epic, a space opera that actually I believe Zack Snyder originally pitched to Disney as a Star Wars movie. But then when they rejected the idea, he workshopped it around, came to Netflix. I believe originally he presented like a 4-hour cut.
Oh, jeez.
And they were like, dog, what are you doing? Like, who do you think we are? And he was like, I'll only do the movie if you'll let me split it into two parts. Because he said that he felt there was no way to trim down the story to, you know, a solid 2 hours. He felt it needed to be broken up into two-hour movies. Which I think, I don't know if that's true. But anyways, well, I don't want to get into the review just yet. So also written partially by Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder, Kurt. Actually, why don't we transition over to our second scene here?
Oh, hello.
Yeah, I got to work on that lighting. It's a little, we got to get like a diffuser, a softbox or something. But so nobody look at my face. But co-written by Zack Snyder, Kurt Johnstad, and Shay Hatton. Let's see if Kurt's done anything.
Kurt's done 300.
300. It's Fringe of Rise of an Empire, which I didn't see. Atomic Blonde. He's doing the second Rebel Moon as well. Wow, not a lot of work at all.
Other than that, I
7 projects in the filmography here. Not particularly amazing.
He looks like Daniel Craig.
2 awards nominations, though. Most screenplay. Oh, Screen Awards. Oh, the Saturn Award. That's a moderately respectable organization. Best writing. I don't know. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, 300 is great, but best writing?
Yeah.
I don't know. What year was this, though? 2008. Is it going to show me? Yes, here we go. 310 to Yuma. The remake is not that great, but the original is incredible.
No Country for Old Men.
Wait. In what universe does 300 win over No Country for Old Men? Or There Will Be Blood.
Or Zodiac.
Dude, There Will Be Blood is insane.
Zodiac was good.
I don't know. Like, winning Granted, it's a Saturn Award, I guess. So Will Smith winning for I Am Legend makes sense.
Johnny Depp? I don't know.
Edward James Olmos? Okay. Who cares about that? And then let's take a look at Shea Hatton, see if they've done anything.
Army of Thieves.
Jinx. Finally, some peace and quiet. Guys, okay, so I'm just going to take a moment here while Shade's jinxed. Let's swap over to the next camera here. I've recently moved into a new apartment, and when Shade showed up yesterday, I gave him like one rule, and I said, this is the first place that is under my name. You know, my name is legally attached to this square footage, this area, this property. So please, for the love of God, keep it, you know, moderately clean. You know, there's one rule. Please pick up your trash and don't, you know, mess anything up.
Hey,
and
I picked up my trash, might I say.
And then we wake up today. I come out to the living room. The trash is gone, which... Yeah. I mean, I don't think I should have to say good job, but good job for picking up your own mess, you filthy pig. But secondly, we're sitting here watching Rebel Moon, the first one, and we're just sitting there, and suddenly Shade goes, oh no! And I look over, and out of nowhere, there's just a massive puddle of ketchup right on this the arm of my new recliner. Well, my new recliner. It's a moderately used recliner.
I can explain. I was fidgeting with a ketchup packet.
There was one rule.
Because I don't know, it was squishy and I don't know, I'm just like that. So I Lennied that crap and it just shot everywhere.
Tell me about the leverage, George.
You know, hey, good thing is, it didn't stain the couch.
Yes. Let's get back to Rebel Moon here. But yeah, so Shade, don't ever let him. You were jinxed. Wait, did I say your name? Oh, somebody's going to have to go back over the footage. May or may not get hit by a bus later tonight.
Crap, man.
I don't know if... I can't remember if... I might have said your name, but I don't know if I did.
We might have to, like, lay low for a little bit. We can't go back. We can't go back.
Bro, you. Like, I'm good. I wasn't jinxed. Anyways. So, I mean, to be honest... Okay, so the writing crew... Not particularly well-credentialed, let's just say.
Yeah.
As far as the cast goes in this film, we have... Oh, let's go back to the other view. Sophia Boutella, probably Boutella, I would think. She strikes me as a someone who would speak Spanish. Algerian, interesting. I have no idea then. It very well could be Boutella. I don't know, but there we go. She is playing the main character, Cora.
Yes.
Who is... Well, I'll read the description afterwards. Jimon Hounsou plays the recently disgraced General Titus. General?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he says, don't call me General. Ed Skrein, a wonderful villain, plays Atticus Noble. What a name. Ajax in Deadpool. Yeah. You noted that early on in the film.
Talk about Fry again.
Yeah, that's probably his best role, if I'm going to be honest with you. Taco Bell, Fry again. Can I zoom in on this?
Dang, that looks intense.
No. Yeah, this looks intense. We should definitely watch this. It's like a 30-second commercial. Michelle Huisman, I guess? Michelle Huisman?
I think it's Huisman.
H-U-I-S-M-A-N.
Huisman.
Oh, he was in the Apple TV series Echo 3. Not I just saw Echo and I thought it was Marvel for a second, but no, not Marvel. Bay Duna as Nemesis, our sword. I don't know what she would. She doesn't really do much. Well, it's tough to get into. Let's finish the cast list, but then we'll get into our no spoilers review. Ray Fisher plays Darian Bloodaxe. Charlie Hunnam as Kai, our outlaw, our scoundrel. Anthony Hopkins as Jimmy, a robot.
He's just Jimmy.
Jimmy. Staz Nair as Tarak, a man who spends the whole movie shirtless. So, you know,
just a thirst trap.
Keep your eye out for that. Froffy?
Sounds like a rap name.
Froffy is how I tend to like my milkshakes. plays Belisarius. And then that's pretty much the end of the main cast. Cary Elwes has a bit role as the king.
Does he?
He's covered up with a beard, but he's still got his traditional smirk.
Yeah.
When he smiles, you can definitely tell that it's Cary Elwes.
Very punchable face. He has a punchable face.
Cary Elwes is such a nice guy.
It's so, like, I don't know.
That's the Princess Bride right there. okay, so let's get into the actual description of this, and then we'll head into our no spoilers review. So, when a peaceful settlement on the edge of a distant moon finds itself threatened by the armies of a tyrannical ruling force, a mysterious stranger living among its villagers becomes their best hope for survival. So, Sophia Boutella, the Cora, is the mysterious stranger, and so she. After the arrival of Atticus Noble and the, do they have a name? They're the forces of the Mother World, but do they actually have, like, a name? Like, the organization? Like, it's not like the Empire.
I don't know, I guess. I guess I don't remember.
I feel like it's pretty ambiguous. It's just traditional bad guy.
Yeah.
But so after they arrive on this homeworld where Cora has been hiding out for a relatively short time, I think they say 2 seasons, which I don't know how long a season is on this planet in this system. But she's been there relatively short and she does the farm work. And as, you know, one would come to find out, she has a past in the military. I'll just leave it at that. And so she goes on a mission to assemble her party and save the friendly villagers. So we can see here the members of our scavenging party here. There's Charlie Hunnam, our scoundrel, Jimon Honsu. Oh, there's Jimmy.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
They really put that right in the poster?
Exactly. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay. Okay, we'll save that for the spoilers portion of the review. Non-spoilers, Shade, what are your first thoughts when it comes to Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire?
A lot of missed opportunities. A lot of missed opportunities, not only with, like, well, dialogue, but CGI especially. Holy crap, it looked like a Halo game most of the time. Like a newer Halo game will be nice, but I'm just kidding.
Was the last Halo game?
I don't know. I've never.
Played I don't. Halo. The only one I played was Combat Evolved. I used to. I feel like they haven't made like a new one in a while. Oh, 2021.
That ain't that bad.
No, yeah, 3 years ago. Halo Infinite. 7 out of 10.
I've seen that. You know that cover art.
Really? I have not.
Really?
No. Well, I don't really pay attention to like Halo. Microsoft in general, you know, I know that Halo is a very, it's a bit like a cultural touchstone, right? Like it's obviously very well known. Halo 3 is widely considered, you know, one of the greatest games of all time. And the Halo theme song in and of itself is just iconic. But I don't pay much attention to it. I never have.
I got no reason to really care about Halo because, well, I'm a PlayStation boy, you know, but I don't know. I don't know. The slow motion. There we go.
No, wait, hang on. we'll get to that.
Okay. Okay. There's just a lot about this movie.
Real quick to wrap up on Halo and then I'll give my no spoiler review of the movie. On Halo, I was going to say, you know, on Paramount Plus, they have that TV show.
Yeah.
Which I think may or may not have been renewed for a second season. But I know that Jacob and my dad, I think, said that it was decent enough. They, you know, enjoyed it. Although now that I say that, I don't know if they finished it. I know that they at least watched part of it and didn't hate it, but I know that there was quite a bit of pushback in the community because the actor who plays Master Chief takes off his helmet like every episode. Oh, okay. I mean, well, look, let me switch scenes here. Maybe I won't. Oh, it's because I'm hitting the wrong button. I'm stupid. Like, we're looking at season one. That's Master Chief. Almost, okay, so two there. But when we get to season two, like, every image of him is, like, without the helmet. And I guess, like I said, I'm not super into it, but I guess that was caused a bit of an uproar because I guess he never takes it off in the game. And not only does he not take it off, I guess it's a big part of the lore.
Well, I mean...
And he gave an interview where he addressed the concerns, and I think somebody asked him, like, what are your thoughts on the reaction to you taking off your helmet all the time? And he said, basically, that he didn't care because it's hard to convey emotion with a helmet on, and I direct you to The Mandalorian. Rest my case.
I was just about to say. I mean,
if you're a decent enough actor, you can put the inflection in your voice that, you know, that conveys the emotion.
Yeah, I mean, voice actors do it all the time.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, sometimes they don't even... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I mean, sometimes a voice actor doesn't even need, like, an animated character to be moving a mouth. Sometimes a voice actor plays, like, a cloud, you know? Or, like, God. There's no physical, like, movement.
Well, yeah, but those aren't, like... That sort of is not the point that we're making here, because those are, like, few and far between roles, like most voice actors, like,
yeah, I guess.
But the point is, I think it's a cop out to say it's tough to convey commotion. It's tough to convey emotion through the helmet.
Yeah,
I think basically what you're saying is you don't think that you can contort your voice enough to convey different emotions, which is anything if anything is just a knock on you. And like, if you own that, I mean, like, I'm not going to act like I could ever, you know, do that. Like, I don't think I could wear a helmet and convey emotion like Pedro Pascal does on The Mandalorian. You know, I'm not going to pretend I could do that. But I think if you can't, then you just own up to it. Right. And I think if you take a character who a core fundamental part of that character is the fact that they don't take the helmet off.
Yeah.
It's the fact that under it, it's the soldier. Right. If that's fundamental to the character, then when you're casting that character, you have to find somebody who's able to do that. You find a Pedro Pascal.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, back on Rebel Moon, non-spoiler review. I agree. I think this movie had the makings of something that could have been really good. I think there are some very interesting things. I really enjoy a lot of the design aspects. I think the universe is very fun. As we discuss, like, there are actually a few things that I really did like. But overall, I think I was let down. It did not quite perform the way that I thought it would. I felt it was severely lacking in, as far as, again, like you said, the level of CGI. I thought the story was, like, I don't know. It just, it didn't feel like there were stakes, really. I didn't feel attached to it. I felt like the dialogue was clunky. I thought the performance and the delivery by most of the actors was not up to par.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I expected a lot more, to be honest, cuz like I said at the outset, traditionally we here are defenders and supporters of Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
I mean, even like, I mean, well, we talk about Man of Steel all the time. And granted, we talk about, you know, the shortcomings of Justice League and of Batman v Superman and stuff like that. But generally, we expect a certain level from Zack Snyder, and it feels like it didn't quite reach that.
Yeah, I mean, we still defend him with Batman versus Superman, you know? Like, at least, I mean, you still defend him a lot in Batman versus Superman, and you didn't really.
I don't like the movie. No, I mean, it's like it's moderately okay up until the end.
Yeah.
And I don't like the way that they did Lex Luthor. But I mean, we've discussed before. Like, I've definitely come around to Batfleck. Right. You know, Ben Affleck as Batman is definitely interesting to me.
Yeah.
One thing that has sort of turned me a little bit against Zack Snyder recently is I watched his appearance on the Joe Rogan Experience, right? He gave a two and a half hour long episode. And I enjoyed hearing what he had to say, for sure. But in relation to Batman v Superman, he had one particular... There was one exchange where I was like, I don't... This doesn't feel... Well, I feel like you're kind of missing something here. And right, and so he talks about how not having Batman and Superman kill. He thinks it doesn't make any sense. Right? Yeah. And he had this point where you push that character to the point where they think they have to kill, right? And you see what they do. I think the way that these characters are, like from comics, the way that they are heroes is that they don't kill and that they will do whatever is necessary to not kill, right? Like, if they are presented with an impossible choice between, you know, saving one person or saving the other, Batman is going to find some way to save both, right? I mean, there are ways to write that where it's obviously like, you know, a cop-out, where it's just... Oh, Batman saves the day because he's a hero. You know, there are obviously stories like that, but the truly good stories where you really feel the character and like you understand them and the writing is well done is when they are pushed to that point where they almost have to kill.
Yeah.
And yet they figure out a way to do it because their convictions are so strong. They believe so strongly that they cannot kill, that they will do the impossible, right? They will come up with... They are so intelligent, you know, so talented that they will come up with a way to save everybody. That's the point of a hero. And don't get me wrong, I don't necessarily like stories where the heroes kill. I don't even think necessarily that, like, you can't write a story where Batman or Superman kills. I think his reason for having Batman or Superman kill... there's no deeper point to it. It seemed like he was like, I want to make Batman and Superman kill because they don't kill, right? I don't think that is reason enough. I think if you want to do something that fundamentally goes against what the character has been for almost a century,
yeah.
You know, I mean, in the 2030s, it'll be, you know, a century since Superman, 1939, and I think Batman came out the year after or something like that, 1940. Maybe it's 38 and 39. Not important. But I think if you're going to do that, I think the way that you would tell a story like that is you look at it from the point of view of what is the thing that pushes Batman to the point that he has to kill. Right, you don't just, you know, write it into the story. You know, you have to find the thing. I don't think. Well, okay, so Man of Steel. Let's take Man of Steel and do Superman, because that's a very different take on Superman, right? And it's a movie I love, so I feel like I can talk about this and criticize it and not feel weird because I still enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, I guess, since it came out in 2012. When Superman kills Zod, snaps his neck so that Zod doesn't, you know, burn that family to death.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if really... What was that beep? Oh, the camera. Oh, no, something happened to the camera. Okay, I'm going to go take a look at that.
Okay, I will keep him entertained.
Yeah, you keep talking. Basically, I think it felt as though it were... if you want to tell a story where Superman kills, you have to look at it from the point of view of, like, the whole story has to ultimately lead up to Superman killing. Right, it has to be of a series of him going through the worst of the worst trials, where he almost fails every single time, and where the stakes continually get higher to a point where it's so drastic that he has to take this ultimate action. Right, and granted, it's difficult to do that over a movie. You can't do action after action after action, but you can do at least something at the end of phase one and something at the end of phase two that makes phase. I meant act. You can do something at the end of those acts where it makes it a little more natural when he ultimately does kill. And so I think there's a way to do it. But like I said, that being said, I still, you know, love that movie and I love that scene.
Yeah.
Will you hit this button? I'm going to go fix the cam, I guess.
Yeah, we're having Chechenol difficulties. You know how it is.
What?
Technical difficulties. Hardcore technical.
So you want me to hit it now?
Yeah.
Oh, it's back on.
I don't know why it went
out. And we're back, baby. Oh.
We're good. Keep going.
Okay. I don't know. This film was something else. Definitely copied, had a lot of inspiration from many different films.
Okay.
Many, many different films.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah. Let's move on.
What
is going on? Let's move on to the spoiler section of the review.
Thank God. You got some things to say. Zach.
You go ahead and start talking.
All right. Zach, we got to have a talk. The CGI for this film looked like as if it came straight out of a video game. Like, it just looked like cutscene CGI. Sometimes it actually just looked like gameplay of a video game. You know, not even cutscene worthy.
Guys, the battery just ended up dying, so this is the only cam we're going to have now, I guess.
That works.
Jinx. No, it's a filler word. That doesn't count. We've had this discussion multiple times.
I know. I keep forgetting.
The CGI was very subpar. It was subpar for sure. Yeah. Most of the ships were just not it. We're just not. And it sucks. And it was bad right from jump too. Like, the very opening scene is a ship coming out of a wormhole, let's say.
Yeah.
A sort of
oddly
shaped wormhole, and the ship comes out and it looks just
awful.
Like, it looks like it should have been made in like 2012.
Yeah.
You know, and the CGI was pretty much bad throughout.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple times where we would compliment it. It was kind of like a pity compliment. It was more of like, oh, hey, that doesn't look too bad.
Yeah. We were like, oh, yeah, this is decent,
hey,
I suppose. The CGI, and if anything, I thought the CGI would be up to par.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like this, if any, like the CGI in Snyder movies is usually pretty good. I mean, you think of the way Dr. Manhattan looked in Watchmen. And that came out in 2009, and he looks great.
The CGI on Jimmy the robot.
His was good.
Looked really good.
His looked really good.
Like we said in the movie.
Oh yeah, so this is a spoiler part of the review.
Yeah.
So let's take a look. So, this is the poster. This gentleman right here is Jimmy.
That's Jimmy right there.
This is Jimmy.
Anthony Hopkins, and then right next to him is
Cad Bane. Here, that's a slightly better view. That's Jimmy. So here's the thing: this robot gets introduced. He's voiced by Anthony Hopkins. You know,
a pretty
all-time great.
Yeah.
And so we assume, you know, he's gonna be a main character. He's gonna be there along for the ride, and in the first act of the movie, like within the first half hour, 45 minutes, he just runs away.
Yeah.
And then we don't see him until like the second to last scene. and he's just gone. And then he comes back and we see him, and he looks like how he does in the poster with the antlers and spear.
Yeah, like.
But then he doesn't. It's not like he says anything. He doesn't interact with anybody. He's just standing in a field like a scarecrow.
Like, he had a revelation during our time watching the other characters. I want to know what happened to him, you know?
All right. How would you, we'll wait, save that for the end.
Okay.
Yeah, no. I mean, it was I was pretty disappointed, cuz he was in a lot of the promotional material, yeah. And it looked really good, and so I was like, "Oh man. Maybe his hope was to make him look good and sort of show him in the film, but sort of, you know, barely use him at all." And then you know, so hopefully they can spend next, you know, a lot of money making him look good and yet not show him, and, you know, tease him, get your interest piqued, so that in the second one, hopefully they get a bigger budget and then they can use him a lot more.
Yeah, I hope, because I really want to see more of that character.
Well, and again, he's in a lot of promotional material for season two. For number two, I mean, yeah. He's got a charge in the trailer for number two. So hopefully he's going to be in it, but maybe he'll just pop up at the end again.
Hey.
Or maybe he'll show up for like the first act and he'll die right in the beginning.
He just gets capped.
Okay, so let's get into the actual story of this, since we're in the spoiler section. Dude, it is like literally just a hodgepodge of like every sci-fi property ever.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like the whole time we were like, oh, hey, this is like from Star Wars, or this is like from
Harry Potter,
or yeah. This is from, yeah, it's like there's, it feels like there's like not an original thing in here at all.
Yeah, no.
he just took everything from everything else and was like, let's make a space epic, but underdevelop everything.
One thing I would like to say that we'd probably talk about anyway was her acting.
Yeah.
The lead girl.
We'll like, get into that. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So, as far as the story itself, so the way that it it feels like there was not much actual substance to the story.
Yeah.
Right? If he there was like bullet points, you know, and he knew that this was going to happen at this village, and then they're going to go pick up the hunting, the party, and they're going to have a little mini fight scene or adventure showcase at every one, and then they'll get to the end battle. But it feels like there was very little actually like tying it together. It felt like there was no reason to go to the visit these people. They spoke like they had something in like a particular reason to go talk to these individual people, but it didn't, like when we were actually there, it was like, it felt like we were just picking up randos,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It didn't make much sense to me. I think here's where I think the fundamental failing of this movie is, right? I mean, once you look past the bad CGI, which is just probably, you know, just an effect of a low budget, right? Like, you, yeah. At a certain point, there's nothing you can do about that when you're doing a space epic and you only have so much money. I think the fundamental issue with this movie is that it wants to build the entire universe from the ground up. And it wants to show you building out the entire universe, right? It's like, we're gonna, you know, do all this exposition and voiceovers, and we're gonna tell all this backstory, and we're gonna make you, you know, we're gonna show you that there's this girl who, for some reason, can. Did a light just go out? Oh, it's the LED. That's dead too.
Gosh dang it.
It said it was supposed to last for an hour and a half. So cool.
How long has it been?
34 minutes. That's okay. It's a test run. This was the first stream, so there's bound to be a few mistakes. So we'll get some better lighting for next time. And I don't know what I'm going to do about the camera, but I'll figure out some way to get power to it while it's going. I think, what was I saying? I know it was talking about how it just goes, we're going to show some girl who can somehow has some power to revive the dead and saves a dead bird, but we're not going to explain it we're not going to come back to it. And we're just going to, it's not going to have any impact on the actual end of this movie. And we're going to, you know, show a massive spider lady for some reason, and then kill her right away, but not talk about what she is or she's going to give her own whole backstory about how something in the air is causing her children not to be born. And it's going to be like the kind of thing, you know, where it feels like you should be emotionally invested, but then we're just going to move right on. And it feels like the crew itself, there's never any time for these people to actually form a bond, right? Yeah. And so when we get to the end, you're supposed to feel like there's a level of camaraderie between the crew, but it's just non-existent because they haven't spent any time together. They've never gone through any conflict as a team. They've just gone through these individual, you know, little encounters where they pick up an extra group and an extra person. But even in those encounters, the only person who actually does anything is the person that they're picking up.
Yeah, there's no emotional connection with any of the characters.
Exactly.
You know, like when Charlie Hunnam's character betray. Oh yeah, this is a spoiler free. I keep forgetting that.
No, we're in the spoiler part. But
okay. Oh yeah, we are in the spoiler part. So when his character completely just betrays him.
Yeah, what's his name? Kai.
I think so.
Kai. Yeah. So this is like the, you continue. And
When he betrays him, you know, like there was no like, oh man.
Yeah. So yeah, it was a moment where I was like, okay, cool. Like, yeah, it makes sense for the character. But like, there's a scene right before this, you know, where he's like, he's talking to Korra and he goes, I'm going to, you know, it's basically like, I'm going to fight for the good guys. I'm on your side now.
Yeah.
And while the scene was happening, I turned to Shade and I was like, bro, why would he say that? Like, nothing is, like, he hasn't gone through anything. They've never gone through anything as a team. They haven't even had a team conflict. And so why is this guy being like, oh man, yeah, now I'm going to join you. Now I'm convinced. Now I'm going to give up this life of crime and you know, villainy. I'm just going to stop being a scoundrel. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And so I was like, this is weird. And then he betrays him, and I was like, oh, yeah. Well, why wouldn't he? Like, he has literally no attachment to these characters, to these people. Why wouldn't he betray them?
And I loved him so much in Sons of Anarchy, but man, he really delivered all the dialogue in this crap so bad.
Yeah, his accent is weird. But that's his real accent.
Do your best.
Like, that's his real voice. Kind of scouse. So he's kind of like, what's a good line? Give me something to say.
Pass me the headphones. I don't know.
It's got to be a longer word so I can get some a lot longer sentence.
Bring me the gold, you peasant. I don't know.
Oh, man, how does he talk? You bring me the gold, you peasant. it was really bad.
Yeah,
all of the line deliveries were bad. But on this character, even so, going back to why it feels like everything it just stolen from something else. In the movie, while the movie was going, we were like, oh, well, this is Han Solo. Like, he's literally, like, he's Han Solo. Like, they didn't even try to make it any different. They were just like, yeah, well, we'll take this character. And then he betrayed him, and I was like, oh, look, it's Lando Calrissian. Like, it was very, everything was very unsatisfying.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I think that there's possibilities for this to be good. I think the way that you make this universe interesting and, like, you know, make it so that it is a massive universe, but the scope of what the movie is so limited, is I think you go at it through the viewpoint of Korra, right? So if we're comparing this to Star Wars: A New Hope, right? We're introduced to the universe through the lens of Luke, right? So we learn about the everyday life of Tatooine, you know, there's like offhanded mention of like moisture farmers and stuff, and it's like they casually, you know, spew some blue milk, but it's like you don't see anything too particularly outlandish in the beginning when you as the viewer are getting introduced to what's going on, right? And then as you proceed, you get to Mos Eisley, the hive of scum and villainy, right? And you see more aliens, you get introduced to, like, you know, you see the Empire a little bit more up close, you see all this stuff, right? You see these scoundrels and you realize, oh, this is the Wild West, right? And you slowly view more and more of the universe through the lens of Luke. Whereas this, it's trying to build every single thing up at the exact same time.
Yeah.
It's trying to create the entire universe and introduce you to everything at the exact same moment. And I don't think it works. And granted, it is slightly more difficult, right? It can't be an exact one-to-one comparison to A New Hope in the way that you explore things, because when Luke is leaving Tatooine and exploring the universe, that's a new experience for him too. So it's like we're learning with him.
Yeah.
Whereas Qora has existed in this universe. She's a well-traveled individual, right? She spent time in the military. She's the most infamous bounty or something in the galaxy, or whatever they say it is. You know, she's the most famous target or something like that. So she's been around. So you have to adjust it. But I think that's the way that you show that the universe has substance and is impressive in this massive thing, without, you know, having a massive like wide pool, but having it be shallow. Yeah. Right. I would much prefer a deep dive, you know,
yeah,
if we're using this analogy.
I guess another big problem I had with it was the fighting choreography.
Yes.
It was so freaking slow. Like, and don't even get us started on, I'll let you take care of slow motion.
Yeah, but let me take control of that.
Oh, I was just going to
say. No, yeah, talk about the choreography.
Every fight, just, it looked so sloppy, and it was just like two turtles fighting, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It looked like there was no time put into the fighting choreography at all.
Yeah, the choreography was absolutely unimpressive.
They could have sped it up.
Well, yeah, they could have, like, yeah, at the very least, they could have sped up the film just a teensy bit so it looks like they're going a little faster. But
hey, yo.
The actual choreography itself is so basic. I mean, there's one part, and I think it was when Cad Bane. Nemesis, played by Bay Duna, is fighting this big spider lady, right? There's a scene where, the hero has, like, two swords, and, you know, the spider obviously has got a bunch of legs. And the choreography for, like, five or six beats is the spider, like, just stabbing at her, and the hero just going, dink, 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 like, blocking them. Like, you couldn't come up with any way to make this a little bit more interesting. It's, like, all of the choreography is so basic.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. That was just something that really got, like, under my skin. And it was just hard to watch at times, the choreo, like, just the fight scenes, because you're just like, okay.
Yeah.
Pick it up.
Well, and like, if the idea is that Qora is, like, this mega soldier, like, she's a super soldier, right? She's very good at what she does. That's the reason why she's one of the reasons why she's the most wanted person in the galaxy or whatever. Like,
yeah.
You would think that she would be, like, a master martial artist of some kind. You know, like, she would be able to fight hand-to-hand. You would think she would have to be to rise to that point. But it's, I mean, granted, like, she takes on, like, a lot of guys. And so they try, like, a lot of people in each fight. And so they try to show that she's this ultra-skilled fighter. But it doesn't come across quite so much when it's the most basic stuff. And again, it's so slow.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the choreography itself is slow. But then we throw in Zack Snyder's, you know, signature slow-mo. Oh, my God. Guys, I hate slow-mo so bad. Spencer Chet, hello. I turned to look at the screen right as that popped up. Wow.
Hello.
Hello, Spencer. How are you this evening?
He is the third amigo.
Spencer, I know that you watched Rebel Moon, and I know that you thought it was good. In brief, what did you think was good about it while I rant about slow-mo for probably the next half hour? Okay, so here's the thing. I don't like slow-mo in general. I think there are some cases where it could be used, and it can be used well. Like in 300, there's a lot of very well-done cinematic slow-mo. There's some scenes in Watchmen that I think are very good. There are some scenes in Watchmen with slow-mo that I think are terrible, but I felt like every single instance, almost every single instance of slow-mo in this film was pointless.
Yeah.
There was one scene where Korra is like storming a barricade, and it's slow-mo, and the slow-mo part is her walking up a step. It's like, it's slow-mo just of her walking up a step. It's not like a massive battlement. It's not like she's vaulting over a wall. She's not doing anything cool. It's not like it's parkour. Shane, I like how, since the LED went out, I like that you're just subsumed in darkness. I didn't notice that before.
Look, I'm like highlighted by the light, though.
That's really funny. Oh, man, that's hilarious. I didn't notice that. Well, if you weren't unlocked, it would be the opposite. It's not like she's doing parkour. It's not like it's something very cool and amazing. She just is walking over a ledge, and so it's like, why are we doing the slow-mo here?
Yeah.
And there's parts like there's slow-mo when they do literally nothing, and then on the cool fight scenes where it's like, I would think you would want to slow down and cool show a bit of choreography here, there's no slow-mo. And it's like every like 30 seconds, it's so over the top.
Yeah,
it's absolutely ridiculous.
One thing that I never actually talked to you that I never really mentioned while we were watching it was how the blaster shots like didn't make any sense at all.
Yeah,
there was one scene that really stood out to me, and I think it was in the beginning where there was a blaster shot that went off, but the actor had the gun pointed completely completely away from the dude, but like the blaster shot like kind of, you can tell it curves to hit him.
And I was just like that.
And another thing that doesn't make any freaking sense at all was when the thirst trap, you know, was the freaking hawk, and he hits his head like 5 times on a rock.
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's another thing. That's another reference. We were like, okay, so Turok, Prince Turok, spoiler alert, I guess, but they say that he's a prince, but we don't like see his land. They don't mention what country he's from. They don't say like what happened to him. They don't do anything. Oh, we got two chats from Spencer here. He says, I just didn't get too into it thinking wise. So just watching it, enjoyed the action and the basic story. I would have to watch it intensely, and I would probably agree with you. Yeah, that's the thing. It's a popcorn flick.
Is that a cheeseburger emoji?
No, it's a cheeseburger. No, it's a crying emoji. Crying.
I can't see that.
And then the second shot is Shade is Darkness.
Yeah, I really look like I'm about to rob you. Yeah, dude. Like.
Well, please don't. But yeah, so Prince Turok. Yeah, they don't address it. They don't do anything with it. Again, it's just another story bead that's touched and then left. The shadow of you on the wall, dog.
I look like a kid.
That's hilarious. I wish we could show you guys that. That's hilarious.
I've switched teams.
So I always knew it. What was I gonna say? Oh, so Prince Turok. Yeah, another thing that they just drop, they hint and then ignore. But before the lights went out, looked heart eyes. Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah. It was supposed to last for a long time. Pause. But it didn't.
We just got some work to do.
Yeah, that's okay. First stream. First time doing video. Prince Turok. So we see him, and he's like working in like a shop or whatever. And then some other guy pulls up and he's wearing like some weird fishnet wife beater that you can see his nipples through when he lays down.
It's Zack Snyder.
At least there's no penises in this movie.
That's his feet to Quentin Tarantino.
that's just a good
hard
point.
Nipples.
Speaking of nipples, I love that the rubber nipples are on the Ozymandias outfit in the Watchmen movie, like George Clooney's. Anyways,
the prince, the thirst trap.
So yeah, fishnet wife beater. You know, they have a little conversation, and oh, lo and behold, Prince Turok is held prisoner to this guy who doesn't want to give him up, but is willing to gamble away his freedom if only the slave can, you know, do X act, right? Yeah. It's literally Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Not only is it Phantom Menace in the sense that, like, the guy has to gamble for his freedom, the guy, the shop owner, the slave owner, is literally like, I'm not going to give this slave away, but I do love to gamble. It's like the dumbest line in the world. And then the slave, Turok, the slave, he's a main character. I should use his name. And then he has to ride a hippogriff in a scene that is like shot for shot remake from Prisoner of Azkaban, Harry Potter. It's like, oh my God, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. And there's a certain scene. Well, when he's flying the frickin', you know, what's it called?
I don't know. I think in the movie the subtitles say Bennu.
The gigantic
Bennu.
Big Bird. Big Bird.
Big Bird.
Oh, when he's riding Big Bird.
Yo!
Wait.
What?
Wait.
Yo, he's doing what?
Ah, dang. When he's riding the Big Bird, you know.
That doesn't make it any better. I know. But like, continue.
The bird runs, like flies right. Remember, this bird's probably going like solid 95 miles per hour.
I forgot that we're screen sharing, so.
Yeah, you freaking. Well, yeah, okay. So for the people not watching the video, the bird flies into the side of a rock, making the prince slam his head into the rock and drag across it like eight times. Yeah, eight times, and the dude just gets up.
Like, see, like, let's just take a look at the CGI here. Look at this thing.
Yeah. Wow.
Look at it. Like, why do his eyes look like that? Wow. Oh, that's what he looks like riding it. I would like to see some of the behind the scenes. I would like to see some of the behind the scenes stuff. Thirst Trap.
He is oiled up the whole movie.
Yeah, it is wild. And there's so many shots of like just his abs.
Zack did it himself.
There's one part where they cut to like the view of the ensemble cast, and he's wearing like a cloak. And so like his shoulders are covered and his chest is covered. So the only part of him you see is his abs. And I like was watching him and I could see him like as the camera turned flex his abs. I was like, dude, you gotta be more subtle about this.
Yeah, this
it was so funny. Oh man.
God, I wish I looked like that.
Okay, so time for the one good thing. Man, I think his eyes almost look better like that. One good thing I will say about this movie is that in traditional this is a weird. When is this article from? Is that what the old title looked like? Oh, I'm not going to read that out. August of 2023. Bro, why did he even wear that in the film? Did they change the costumes after releasing this promotional material? They changed the whole logo.
I'm kind of
it almost looks better.
I'm kind of scared something's going to grab me
from the dark.
Yeah.
I would be too. Like I don't think I locked the front door.
Like no.
One good thing I will say is that in traditional Zack Snyder fashion, there are a few like pretty beautiful shots. Like the interaction, there's an interaction between Jimmy, the robot, played by Anthony Hopkins, and a young girl who braids him like a crown of flowers. And I thought the cinematography of that interaction was very well done. There are a few other shots where the focal length is set really low. The lens is wide open, right? And so yeah. You get this really nice bokeh, right? And then there's...
It was beautiful. It was a good scene.
But like, okay, but like, for example, there are some things that I they were almost there and didn't quite land, right? Like in the beginning, when we're setting up the universe and Korra is playing in the dirt, right? There are shots there that have the potential to be good, but the lighting is just not it.
Yeah.
Like there's one in scene in particular where it's a... used in lots of movies, you know, of close up of the face, and she's like slightly looking down, and the sun is behind her head, but her face is so dark, like you couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
Right. And I think the way to upgrade that scene and make it a little bit more beautiful is to have some of the sun, like the solar flare behind you, so you get some of the rays of light shining through. So then that way, at least if the face is dark, there's at least, like, it makes sense that it's dark rather than you just having a poor lighting setup, you know?
Yeah.
But that I will say is the only thing about this movie that I will say is explicitly good, that there are a few shots that I really enjoy.
There were.
I don't think there's not that many.
Yeah.
There's less than I would expect again from a Zack Snyder film.
Another thing I will say that I liked was the like their guns, like their plasma rifles, you know,
mm-hmm.
what he did with like the, you know, kind of just the meltingness.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea of that the bullets themselves are plasma. And so when they make impact, they sort of splatter out in a liquid,
yeah.
in a molten hot liquid, I think is really, I thought it looked, I liked the idea. I think it was mostly pulled off pretty well. I think there were a few instances where I don't think it was necessarily done. Like, it looked bad. There was one moment when it was used in a slow-mo shot where you could tell that it looked really bad. Do you see the green screen, massive green screen?
Yeah.
On that clip?
Yeah.
I rest my case.
Okay.
but, yeah, I know. I think more or less, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of design ideas that I really enjoyed. More things that are stolen. There's literally just lightsabers.
Oh, right. I forgot about the sabers.
Yeah, Rebel Moon. I'm just going to type glowing sword.
I mean, yeah, it's just a hot blade, but they really do try to.
I mean, yeah, it's different in this. Like, it's ever so slightly different in the sense that you can tell that they're like swords with blades and not like cylinders, and that there's like a vapor effect on them.
If I took. That shot of her scraping the ground, or that shot with the two blue swords up there, and just replace gave him like cloaks. It was
when she did that, I was literally like, okay, that's like a Star Wars scene, literally. I was hoping to get another scene of a better image of the blue ones because they looked a lot like lightsabers.
Gosh, this movie could have been so good.
Yeah. Yeah, there was much potential there as far as I'm concerned, but it just did not quite.
Yeah, it.
Here. Oh, that's Obi-Wan Kenobi. No wonder it looks like a lightsaber. It's from Star Wars.
Lightsabers are from Star Wars?
There's Count Dooku.
Oh. Long face.
There's He-Man for some reason. I don't know. Yeah, I think it really did have the potential to be good.
Yeah.
Like, I think it just really suffers from the fact that he wanted it to be this massive universe, right? And I like I said, I think he just went around it in the wrong way. I think if you're going to do the massive universe, you focus mostly on Korra, on building out her story, and through that introduce the villains and the main conflict, yeah. But a little bit more about the universe. But then you just plant these little tiny seeds with each of these other characters, with all these other villains, right? You plant tiny seeds that you then let sprout and bloom, and you add more to in part two and in what I think you read, he has plans for 6 movies or something like this.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I don't doubt that the universe itself is big enough for that. It's just it's tough to see them making more than the second one if the quality of the second one does not drastically increase.
Well, I mean, based off the trailer, it doesn't look horrible.
The second one does, in fact, look better. I'll agree to that.
And by the looks of the second trailer, I mean, we'll probably get to see more backstory of a lot of our new crew, you know, which would be good to know some more of.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious on, you know, the general.
Yeah.
His backstory sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, the Battle of Sadue or whatever they... Or something like that. I don't know. Sawade or Sawuda. I don't know, man. It's some random amalgamation of letters. Yeah. No, I would like to see more about that. I really want to know more about, like, Jimmy. Like, where him and the other robots come from. Right? Well, because... So the idea is that they were the former guards... of the king, of Cary Elwes. And then when the king died, they just gave up fighting or something. They swore off violence, or maybe less they swore off of it, but when the king died, that which they were sworn to protect, they saw no need for violence anymore. I would be interested in seeing a little bit about... Well, I want to learn about the king himself.
Yeah.
I would like to see Jimmy operate as a guard of the king, right? Yeah. I want to see a little bit of prequel action here.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy's Jimmy.
Jimmy's Jimmy.
Jimmy's Jimmy. It's kind of a dumb name. I don't know why they gave him a name.
Jimmy? Well, because I think the initials for the unit are JM or something like that. Or I don't remember.
This is...
But, like, see, that scene, like, that is in the beginning. This is what I'm talking about. It's gone now, but...
When she was smelling the dirt.
Specifically, when her head comes up. I didn't go back far enough. This, right here. Like, this is a very common scene style in film, right? They use this a lot, this angle with the sun in the background. But her face is so dark, you lose all... Like, there's no detail on whatever she's wearing. Like, we just have no idea. I guess I could have gone full screen. Why is there no sun flare coming through?
Yeah.
Like, why is there no front lighting?
See, it just makes no sense, you know?
Makes no sense. It's a Baby Keem song.
Oh.
What
song is that?
It's called No Sense.
Oh. I guess I've never heard that
these
one.
Didn't get run away.
These what? These what?
yeah
you got me.
Yeah, like, it's like this is the potentiality for a really good scene, but or a very good shot, I should say, and yet there's just no lighting. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I wonder what that dirt does smell like.
Probably dirt.
Well, I don't know, it's a different planet. Maybe their dirt smells different.
Less dirty and more clean?
Less dirty and more clean. Yeah.
I'm just really irritated. Like, because I, you know, I'm obviously a big fan of, like, universe building, right? That is always one of the things that I love the most about exploring a new property, right? I mean, it's why when I was younger, I spent so long learning the lore of I could tell you the entire story of Diablo, of World of Warcraft, of Assassin's Creed, because having these massive expansive universes is so interesting to me, and having these stories that you can explore. And so when I see it done like this, in a way where, like, there's so much potential, but I think it's just poorly done, it irritates me, maybe more than it should.
Yeah.
But especially knowing that he wants to continue and make more things. He wants this to be an entire franchise. Like, it. I don't know. I just think everything is so shallow.
Maybe he changes some things up with the rated R version, you know?
Yes, that is true.
I don't even think we said anything about that, that they're going to do a rated R version of the first one.
That is true. Yep, they're doing a rated R version of this one, part one and part two. And I believe that he said that, like, the rated R versions, they're slightly, like, they have the same end goal, but he said they get there in a different way. Oh, okay. So the story itself might be slightly different.
And I bet you the fight scenes are going to be way different with...
I hope so.
I hope.
I hope so. And I think he said the rated R version is also the canonical version as well. Like, okay. I'd have to double check that for sure, but I think I remember reading that.
Did you ever watch the rated R version of Batman versus Superman?
I don't know.
I remember...
Has it ever been on HBO?
I do not know. I just remember Grandma had a CD, a CD of it, and it came with a rated R version.
Okay, so look, for those of you who are now watching me, so, like, Shade, look at how lightly I tap on this key.
Okay.
Look at how lightly I tap on it before, and it registers on the screen.
Oh, wow.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to turn on my flashlight on my phone. Look at how lightly I'm depressing this. Oh, okay, that was a bad one. I pressed all the way down on that. Like, I have to barely tap it. And it types it in. And so every time I'm typing, I swear, guys, if we were doing this from, like, my laptop keyboard, I can type very well. I promise. Yeah. I promise. I practice at it. What am I looking at? Batman v. Superman. I think they used to have, like, the unrated version as a separate listing on IMDb. Maybe not.
Oh, what the heck?
I hate the IMDb, web page. I like on the phone, the app is so handy, and it's did that not say Ultimate Edition? Is this, I don't know, the Ultimate Edition may or may not be on HBO Max.
God, I freaking love Batfleck. My favorite Batman, and that's just a fact.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you can say he's your favorite Batman without him having his own solo film.
I just love him.
I just don't. I think he does a decent job. I would like to go back and rewatch it because I actually haven't seen these in quite a while. But he's definitely got the build. We always talk about that.
Yeah.
But personally, I can never, even if he's... If he actually is, I don't think I could ever say it, that he's the best Batman without having him be his own movie, because I don't know what he's like if he could carry a solo film as this version of Bruce Wayne, you know?
What was the?
That's a sick photo.
God, that is. What was the plan getting Jesse Eisenberg?
She was in this?
No, but she was Selina Kyle.
Yeah, I was going to say in the Gotham show. Weird. Anyways, what were you going to say?
I don't know the thought process of getting Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor.
I hate him as Lex Luthor, dog. I hate it. I'm so excited for Nicholas Holt, though.
Yes.
For a Superman. It's not Superman Legacy anymore. It's just Superman.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it's not Superman Legacy.
When did they change that?
Like a month and a half ago or something.
Oh, crap. Maybe.
Yeah, they changed it. It's just Superman now, I think.
It seems like I need a podcast to get all my nerd news from. Well, good for you.
Okay, well, do you have any final thoughts on Rebel Moon?
Not good ones. No, I don't know. It had much better potential than it gave us, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
It had so much better character development that it could have done. It had better dialogue that it could have had. You know, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, like I've said a couple times, I mean, there's absolutely potential here. I think it could be an interesting universe that I may or may not want to see expanded upon.
Yeah.
I'm not excited for the second one, which is not a good sign.
Yeah.
You know, which is never a good sign. I don't really, like, let me put it this way. We were watching this, and we were, like, 45 minutes in, and I was like, man, I don't want to watch the rest of this.
Yeah, it was.
I was like, man, we should just go to Walmart. But we obviously finished it. I think there is definitely a chance for this to actually turn into something. But we need better writing, better direction, a better story, better acting, better CGI. It just needs to be better pretty much all across the board.
I just hope he improves the rated R version. I'm going to watch, like you said, I am going to watch the rated R version too, you know, just hoping that
Double tap. It
improved a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely gonna watch it.
And who doesn't like a little bit more gore, you know? There was barely any in this movie.
Yeah, so they're releasing the R-rated versions of both 1 and 2 at the same time.
Okay.
I don't know if they've given a release date.
Yeah, I mean, his abs are just showing. Like, what's the point of wearing
that's the scene,
that?
Yeah. As the camera turns, you can watch him flex his abs in this scene. It's hilarious.
Man, he got pumped up before that scene.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine how many sit-ups he did? Well, and, you know, with a, you know, dude, that must have sucked because you realize every day of filming, he's dehydrating himself.
Oh, yeah.
Every day, because to make his skin as thin as possible to make those muscles pop, like, you're dehydrating yourself every day.
Dang.
You know, that's why when they film movies, like, if there's a scene where an actor needs to be shirtless, like say in I don't know, a movie with Hugh Jackman, like a Wolverine movie, there's one where he's, like shredded to the bone. Like, you can see all of his veins.
Yeah.
Man, which one would that have been? The Wolverine, maybe?
I think it's the Wolverine. Wait.
Or maybe Days of Future Past? I don't know. Not important, I guess. But if they're going to film a scene like that, generally, they do that on, like, the first day. So that then the actor, you know, starves themselves, dehydrates themselves, basically puts them on death's door for a little while. And then they can film that scene and get done with it and then just move on. And, you know, then the actor can start eating a little bit more, drinking a little more, putting on a little bit more weight throughout the rest of the filming so they're a little more comfortable.
Yeah, I have pity for actors a lot of the time. But
Yeah, sometimes. But honestly, most of the time I don't, because you agreed to that and you're getting paid.
That
so
is true.
And for most of these people, like for Jason Momoa or for Hugh Jackman, you're getting paid a redonkulous amount of money. So I don't feel bad at all.
Oh jeez. That's what it says in the freaking article.
Oh jeez. I was looking for a date, but I don't think they've given a release date for the R-rated cuts. You're arriving in 2024, so.
You heard it here, folks. Brennan's looking for a date.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, did that say this summer? Oh, okay. So probably like August, if I had to guess, July, August.
Spencer's.
Whoa, 6 hours?
Oh my God.
They're an hour longer each than the original. Oh my God.
Crap, that's going to be a blast.
One thing that I do respect, very hard R-rated. Okay. Pause, but interesting.
It's not just hard. It's
one thing I do respect is that Spencer says, "Do your gorilla impressions." How about this? If we have 25 concurrent viewers on our review of The Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes when that comes out in May, when we do a stream, when is that? Planet. Planet.
Planet.
Kingdom of the, May 10th. So when we do a stream to review this, if we have 20 people watching the stream at the same time, I'll do my gorilla impression live on the air.
You at least do the.
I find that unlikely.
Do the Fat Bastard impression at least.
All right, I got to back up because I might blow out the mic. I'll do the Fat Bastard impression, but no, I'm saving the gorilla for Planet of the Apes. It only makes sense. It's only logical. All right, give me a minute. I got to back up a little bit. I ate a baby. Get in my belly. I tell you what, Dr. Evil, I got a deal for you. You keep your mojo and your money, but I get your baby.
Clip that crap. Oh, man.
What was I talking about for Rebel Moon?
The Thing.
Yes. I don't know.
It was a movie.
Oh! I know what I was going to say, because we were talking about, I tried to hit your hand. We were talking about, like, giving extra, like, director's cuts and stuff. Obviously, when a director gets snubbed by, like, the production company, I feel like a director's cut is warranted. Sometimes, when you're like, this isn't the movie that I wanted to make, there were things that I wanted to keep in or to take out or to change or whatever, but the studio said no. And because of that, I'm releasing a director's cut, which is the definitive edition, right? I respect that. I think Zack Snyder just, like, is having fun with, like, making extra cuts of movies.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's three cuts of The Watchmen. Of Watchmen, there's, you know, the theatrical cut, which is not that good, frankly. There's the director's cut, which is like, I think it's like an extra 20 minutes or something, and it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's got some cut scenes. And then there's the ultimate edition, which is like an hour and a half longer.
Gosh.
And it has an entire motion comic. Like, it's way over the top. And he's talking about making another cut of Sucker Punch, which, like, who's asking for that?
It was a good movie, but it wasn't that great. Listen,
who is actively clamoring and calling for another edition of Sucker Punch? Who has talked about Sucker Punch since it's been made?
Yeah.
Nobody talks about it. So, like, why is Zack Snyder being like, I want to make an extra edition? Who is that for? I mean, that movie was like a decade ago. Well, how old is that movie?
2005.
Wow. That was really bad. Update. I'm buying a new keyboard so that you don't have to see this.
Oh, wow. 2005.
2011. Yeah, they're talking about making another cut of this. Like, who is clamoring for this? Who talks about this? And obviously, I mean, he's got the rated R version of Batman v Superman. He's got the Snyder cut of Justice League makes sense, obviously, because of the circumstances involving the filming of that movie and then the release, right?
Yeah.
So that one makes sense. Denis Villeneuve, he gave an interview where they asked, like, if there would be a director's cut of, like, Dune. And he said, no, absolutely not. I will never do a director's cut of my movies. Or maybe it was about Blade Runner 2049, because, you know, there's multiple cuts of Blade Runner as well. Maybe it was about that. But he said, no, I will never do a director's cut, because if it gets cut on the floor, then it's cut. It's not in the movie anymore. It doesn't matter. It's gonzo, right? The movie that gets put in the theaters is the movie. That is the movie in my head, in everybody's head, because that is what we put out in the theaters. That's what people pay to see. That's what the studio paid to make. And I respect that. I do respect that, of being like, no, the movie is the movie. I'm not going to make another edition.
Yeah.
I respect that.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, there doesn't need to be a director's cut for everything.
No, absolutely not. I mean.
And it kind of just seems like you're just filling it. You're just like, you know, all right, this was bad. Let's improve it, even though it's already out.
Well, and it feels like, oh, you're making an extra cut because you want to get the DVD sales.
Yeah,
you want to get your cut of the DVD sales. It's like on a film, like when you're talking about three cuts of Watchmen, multiple cuts of every movie that you make, and you're talking about making a new cut for a movie that nobody cares about. Nobody's cared about at least since it came out, and probably didn't care about it then. And it's only got 6.1 stars, a 33 Metacritic score. Like, nobody cares about this movie. So why are you talking about doing another edition. There's no point. And to me, it's like, oh, you want the DVD sales.
Yeah.
Or you want to just be in the news. You just want to make a press tour for yourself where you're like, I'm releasing another movie.
Well, I just don't, like, he's such a good director and he can make so much new good stuff, you know?
Well, I wonder if he really can.
That was cool. You were on Wonder Woman when you said, I wonder. Oh, my God.
I wonder if he can, like, actually, like, make his own stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, most of the stuff he's done that's good is, you know, a property that's already existed. It's an adaptation or a new take on a character that's well-established.
Yeah.
300's a Frank Miller comic. Watchmen is Al Moore. This is a book, Guardians of Ga'Hoole. I don't know about. I think Dawn of the Dead's a remake, isn't it?
If it is.
Yeah, Dawn of the Dead. Is this George Perez? George Romero. George Perez is a comic author or a comic artist or something. 300, I said Frank Miller comic. I don't know about Sucker Punch, but Man of Steel, obviously Superman, well-established character.
Yeah.
Zod coming to Earth, a well-established story. You make it your own, but...
It only has a 7.1.
I know. A lot of people don't like it.
That's crazy.
Batman v Superman. I mean, a lot of that is from... I mean, there's Doomsday. There's Dark Knight Returns. Returns? Yeah, Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
Justice League, obviously. I don't know about Army of the Dead. I think that's an original one. And that one was pretty fun. Yeah. For sure. But Rebel Moon, again, like, his own property, his own universe... And didn't necessarily do that great building it out. The Fountainhead. This is a book by Ayn Rand. And I don't know. Like, I don't know really if he can. Okay, so it doesn't look like there's credit to like a book or a novel for Sucker Punch. So that might be an original, but I've also never seen it. So I don't know if it's good or not.
Yeah.
In the interview with Rogan, he said that he still would really like the opportunity to fully adapt the Dark Knight Returns storyline.
Really?
Yeah, and he in the pod, he was like, obviously there's some similar, there's some bits taken from it from Batman v Superman, but he says that he would like to adapt that story specifically.
Do you think they could get Zack Snyder back to direct DC movies?
Yeah, I mean, he would do it. I don't know if the thing is, I don't know if they would ever hire him again just because of the way the DCEU has been received.
Yeah.
I feel like they wouldn't want to backtrack, right? This is the DCEU. You know, they're moving forward. They want to distance themselves from the DCEU in every way possible. And that's why, you know, they've recast everybody, right? There's no holdovers, are there?
No, I think everyone's recast.
Yeah. So... You know, I mean, I like, and frankly, I don't know if it was The Dark Knight Returns, I might come back to see it, but yeah. I'm not clamoring for him to return to DC.
God, a Dark Knight Returns movie would be great.
It could be. Yeah, it really could be. Could get real weird. could get real weird real fast.
It could.
You'd have to change quite a few things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously a great story. I mean, Frank Miller.
Yeah.
Do you remember his back is turned to us, right? They recently discovered, or...
I think so, yeah.
So, for those of you who aren't tuned into the comic, to the comic niche here, Dark Knight Returns is widely regarded as one of the greatest comics of all time. Certainly one of the greatest Batman comics of all time. It's written by Frank Miller. It is a story of an older Batman he's sort of just old and curmudgeon-y, right? He's old, right? Isn't he like 60?
Yeah.
Like, he's got some gray hairs. And so he just doesn't care anymore. Like, he's ruthless. and I'm not going to go into the whole story, but basically the cover is a really iconic cover of Batman being like, yeah. Oh, you can't see my other arm. But it's a really iconic cover. And so there was a really long debate in the comics community for a very long time about which direction Batman was facing. it's a comics community, so they're going to have debates over stupid stuff. I realize how stupid this sounds. But which direction he was facing. And the argument was because a lot of people felt like he was facing towards us because the idea was that Batman would never turn his back on the people.
Yeah.
It was like a character thing. And I don't know. I don't think, I don't know if that was like an actual like rule, like that they never done, if he'd never had his back to a comic, to the reader in a comic page before, or a comic cover before. I don't know. Or if it was just like a fan, you know, it's like fan canon. I don't know. But yeah, basically, I think they determined that his back was to us, right?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Dark Knight.
This is serious. This is some serious shit, guys.
Returns back direction. I'm not gonna read this. I'm not gonna read through the article. It's not that important to me. Okay, so let's see. Just about at an hour and a half. I think that's where we're gonna stop, right? We're a little bit short, but we're gonna call it here, but real quick, Shade. No, we already gave the final thoughts on Rebel Moon, didn't we?
Yeah, let's give an extra one.
Okay, so yeah, Rebel Moon part one. Actually, we need to rate it. I didn't make a New Wave Nerds account, so we can't officially rate it. But how many stars out of 10 would you give Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire?
Because there's still chance for potential with the rated R version, I'm going to give it, I don't know, a 5 ain't too bad.
I would give it a 5 too.
You know? A 5 and then possibly a 6 if
I would say, I don't know. I'd say I don't think anything can make this movie. Nothing that comes afterwards will ever make this movie amazing. There are too many bad things in this movie, like that are because of the movie itself, right? Yeah. It's not like like, if this movie, if the acting was great and the CGI, if everything was great except for the fact that the story didn't work because it's so shallow, if that was the only thing wrong with it, then having more projects in the future might color my perspective of it. But because there are so many things that are bad in this movie, no matter how good any of the subsequent films will be, this will always be a 5 in my eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
I mean, you know, barring, obviously, like, opinions can change. I could come back and actually be like, oh, it's still fun. You know, like, personally, I would raise it, you know. But I mean, like...
Yeah.
For personal experience reasons, not based off of, like, any supplemental material, I might change the rating. So, yeah, I will say it's definitely a popcorn flick. Like, it's fun to watch.
It is fun to watch.
You know, like, yeah. Go ahead and give it a view. Oh, one thing I also wanted to note. Zack Snyder was DP. He was the director of photography, the cinematographer for this film, which not often that directors do both jobs, especially with a blockbuster film. There's almost always a separate person. That's a good view of the lightsabers. Yo.
Yo. Is that Jimmy?
Oh, no, it is synced up. For a second, my cursor was not synced.
Well, I thought you were saying yo about gyms.
Anyways, so Rebel Moon, part two, The Scar Giver. it was released yesterday, April 19th, available now only on Netflix. I will say, the trailer for this one at least looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, I remember the trailer for the first one looking pretty decent, too.
So...
And so far, the ratings is... This one's actually rated lower than the first one. With, I don't know, so 9,100 of reviews on, okay, so I mean, obviously much less reviews. It did just come out yesterday. I don't even know why I had to bother looking that up. That was common sense.
It still has a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a chance that people could,
bring some,
could, could start to enjoy it a little bit more. I don't know what this emoji is. It's so small, I can't see what that is.
Dang it, bro. It has a good personality.
But yeah, so, I mean, like I said, even though the first one was bad, I will be watching the second one because I do want to see how they continue the story.
Yeah.
Because the first one was very unsatisfying. The ending, the way that it just everything about it. So I want to see if they can make the conclusion here a little bit more satisfying, and I want to see if they build out the story for you know, the side characters. So I will definitely be tuning in for the second one, even though I wouldn't necessarily recommend the first one, unless you just want to have something passively on in the background, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What are you gonna try and watch this one, or what do you think?
I'm gonna try. if you get a call from the police department saying I'm dead and deceased,
I think okay. So take a look at this. This is a good sign. Anthony Hopkins is higher on the cast list in the second one than he was in the first one.
Oh, okay.
So he's likely gonna have, you know, a much bigger role. It's not like they're just gonna tease him and then not do anything. Also, I think. Yeah, Cary Elwes is a lot higher on the cast list in the second one. So maybe we'll get a lot of back flashbacks.
Yeah.
I almost said back flashes.
Back flashes.
But yes, all right, we are going to leave it there. Almost exactly an hour and a half. We timed that pretty good. I think it was a pretty successful stream, apart from the technical difficulties with the camera and with the light. We're going to be back next week with special guest Spencer Starosik, which is good because he's going to be on the pod, but sucks because our one chatter is going to be gone. The chat's going to be dead. But man,
yeah,
I think this was it was fun.
Yeah, good test run.
Turn on notifications for this channel, New Wave Nerds, because we're going to be posting individual segments around news stories Monday through Thursday over there. So keep tuned for those. Stay tuned for those, not keep tuned.
Do the things.
Make sure you're tuned. You know, what's the difference between a tuna fish and a piano?
What?
You can fish a piano, but you can't tune a fish.
That was
you can fish a piano but you can't wait
you can fish a
I mean obviously the real joke is you can tune a piano wait what's the joke
you can tune a piano
I meant to purposefully get it wrong
but now
I
were confused
I can't tell
I was confused from the start
anyways that's gonna be it. What do you call two chips dating? Asks Spencer. I don't know, Spencer. What do you call two chips dating?
Just give it a second to send through.
Wait.
Is that three people? Oh my gosh. A relationship.
Oh,
whoa, Brendan.
Pause. Brendan. All right, guys, we're going to call it there before we just continue to talk about nonsense like we normally do.
Basically.
So, if
you're wondering what we're drinking Barks root beer.
You're drinking Barks. I'm not. That's going to be the end of the stream. Goodbye. Have a wonderful night. We'll see you guys next time.
Yes.